This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. Morena, no mai kiti korero. Welcome to the catch up on Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo irarangi o na tangata o Manawatu. It is a Wednesday morning, and so we turn our attention to the media and find out what our journalists and reporters have been commenting on and reporting on in the past week or so. And this morning, from the Manawatu Standard, we are delighted to have Matt Dallas in the studio. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Fraser.
It's been a couple of. We missed the last one. Trying to remember why that was. I know we missed the last one.
Possibly through a sick child.
Yes.
That's often been the way.
I think you and I are both afflicted with more than one child, and that means the chances of having sick children dramatically increase, exponentially increase. But we're making it work. It's the new normal, and so we must persevere. So delighted to have you back in the studio this morning. And we're going to have a look at what Manawatu Standard's been reporting on, and we're going straight to today's front page.
Yes, we've decided. We went with a very, I think, a joyful and jubilant front page, which
yes.
I think we all need more and more of, and the times we're in. And it's lovely story that Sonia Holm, one of our Massey journalism student, has done for us, where she got along to the Ringura Community Centre on a Monday night, where there is Bollywood dancing classes, and they've been going for many years. And she's sort of, I guess, has told the story of what it means to the women who go along and attend. There's about 20 of them. Normally there's maybe about 15 each Monday, and they're just basically, I guess, putting away the stresses of their daily lives and come together for fun and just dance without any judgment or need to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a real, I suppose, a haven or an escape for them, but it's also an embrace in terms of, I think, coming together with and just enjoying the diversity as well, because they come from a whole lot of different cultures.
Pākehā okay.
women who have immigrated here, former refugees, and you know, they bring food, celebrate different occasions, and it's just it's just a really, really lovely read.
It sounds awesome, and good to have that multiculturalism and that acceptance as well, because all too often in the news we hear about the divisions, not the coming togethers.
Yes, and I mean, even earlier this week, I've already the grumbles that are coming in about post Matariki and the big fuss over this, what was that about? Oh, the fireworks, who paid for that? And
Well, actually, I mean, on that note, well, we'll get to Matariki in a minute. But I mean, are this group looking for more people to go to the group? Are they wanting to expand it, or is it more just a little snapshot of one of the many things that people can do?
It's not like they're in need of more members, but they'd certainly welcome. I think if more women wanted to show up and come along, and I think all of us are looking for some escape from stresses, I think, these days. So I think the door is definitely open, and there is a lovely video from Warwick Smith that's with the story on the Stuff website, so people can certainly check out the video and see if it's for them.
You may not have an answer to this, but dear listener, I'm playing devil's advocate here. I think the group is awesome, but where do the men go if they want to Bollywood dance?
I'm not sure. There's nothing in the story to say that men can't attend. Mm. And there is on the Wednesday night, there's a children's session, but the group, I guess, happens to be a group of women who are doing the dances, and they get up, in the outfits, and that could be the follow up. What are the men doing that night? Are they just sitting in front of the TV, or are they off to their own thing?
It would be, I think, prudent to point out now that if people, maybe not interested in Bollywood dancing, but interested in embracing and experiencing other cultures, the Manawatu Multicultural Centre at Hancock Community House on King Street is an awesome place to go to find out what's going on, because they often put on events. I know we're going to be helping with an event for them later this year, but also they have World on Stage every couple of years, or they did until the dreaded C word turned up. But there's lots of opportunities. And, of course, Festival of Cultures, which the Standard covers pretty comprehensively each year. Have we missed one? I think we might have missed one.
I'm trying to think whether COVID may have put the kibosh
one of them. We got in just under the radar in 2020. I don't think there was one in 2021. And there wasn't one this year, was there?
I don't think it's been one this year.
But definitely an awesome opportunity. And if you are looking for the next Festival of Cultures, a word of advice, wear the elasticated trousers. Because, wow, the food. Yep. You mentioned Matariki. Matt, let's talk about that, because I heard it on another radio station, which will remain nameless, that this is the first time New Zealand has celebrated Matariki. No, this is the first time we've acknowledged it with a public holiday. Matariki is celebrated by many, many thousands of people every year. Regardless, it was a public holiday and it did bring in the wider sort of New Zealand population into experiencing it a bit more and understanding it a bit more, which I think was awesome. Some people will disagree. They're probably not listening to NPR, though. What were your reporters doing for Matariki?
Well, we had we got to the largest festival, the Pōanga Festival, on Friday evening, mm-hmm. And I took my family along to that, and that was heaving with people down at the waterfront. It was a great occasion. I think there's probably more people than what they had anticipated. Yep. There was certainly a strain on, you know, the food trucks, and I think, you know, everyone could be probably quite quick to grumble about the weight with that sort of thing. And I can imagine if my children were younger and less tolerance for patience, then mm-hmm. it could have been a bit more fraught. But, you know, we sucked it up, turned our heads and enjoyed the entertainment on the stage. And, we all wrapped up warm, and fireworks was fantastic. It was a great event. And I think our coverage, the one thing that we really wanted to put out there this year was the significance of the Pōanga Star, and how it was more significant, I suppose, than the Matariki stars for many iwi in the right. central, lower North Island, including over in Whanganui as well, where off the Tararua Range is often obstructed the view of the other stars. So Pōanga takes on greater significance.
It's the danger of being the silent majority, isn't it? When you turn up to an event like that and the event organisers only hear the fringes of a conversation, either a thing is very bad or it's very good. And then the silent majority who are, I'm not going to say ambivalent, but go, here's an event, it's Matariki, let's just go and enjoy it. They all turn up and everyone is surprised at the sheer numbers. But it is the price of being in the silent majority. If you're not going to speak up and go, yeah, that seems like a good idea, we'll probably go. You know, I guarantee you the Facebook event, you know, those interested in going, was nowhere near the numbers that turned up.
No, and it's one of those sort of events, because it is outside, it's in winter, people are going to think, well, we'll see what the weather's doing. So you don't know until it happens. And I think it's a great springboard for the future. And I think obviously a lot of families, because of it being a public holiday, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Pākehā families are probably, you know, dipping their toe in and, you know, wanting to embrace it. And, and that was great. And
did you get a gauge of whether people were embracing this additional public holiday to the calendar, or whether people were more in favour of what I call the Luxton line, which is, you know, well, we can only have so many public holidays because then the economy starts to suffer?
Yeah, I mean, most of the people we spoke to, and even early in the week, we were asking people just out on the street what they were planning to do, and the majority of comments were pretty positive. And I guess you could say the people who probably just didn't want to talk to us outright, maybe they would have been less enthusiastic about it. But those who were happy to have the chat with us, we're pretty positive and constructive.
Because it strikes me that an additional public holiday will benefit the industries that have suffered the most during the pandemic, hospitality and entertainment. People will go, well, I'm not working, we'll go to a cafe for lunch, or we'll go and see a show.
Yeah, there should, you know, should be some spin-offs. Actually, it'll take some time to probably figure out whether there were the spin-offs for business. I mean, and I go into the future, I guess there's lots of discussions about, I guess, what might happen with Queen's Birthday as well. And, mm-hmm. you know.
If Luxton has his way, Labor Day.
But I think so. You know, so long as the Queen is with us, then the Queen's Birthday, I think, will remain. But in the future.
Not a King's Birthday?
That'll be discussed at a future time, won't it? Whether it's still deemed relevant when there's a new monarch. Mm. But I think it's kind of out of respect for
Liz.
fellas at the moment. I don't think anyone's going to probably be a brave person to probably try and draw a line through it right now. But
yes.
In the future.
A brave person mentions the word republic at this time of the proceedings. We are here with Matt Dallas from the Manawatu Standard, looking at what they've been reporting on in the past couple of weeks. We've touched on the Bollywood dance group and Matariki articles in full in your paper or on the Manawatu Standard website via Stuff. If you'd like to listen to this or previous editions of the Catch-Up series, head to the website npr.nz/show/catch-up. Also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your online listening. Turning to slightly more serious matters, Shilpi Araha was, Shilpi wrote the article and Warwick got his drone out. A brilliant photograph of this item, the dangerous narrow bridge near Cheltenham.
Yes, it's one of those cases where the picture can just paints 1,000 words with showing that how the highway just narrows going onto this little Haines Bridge. And
it's one of those ones where it should be like a give way, shouldn't it? Like or one way, one direction has priority.
Yeah, but certainly the thought of residents there that it's very tight for two vehicles, and if one of them's a truck coming through, then you got to give way.
Breathe in.
Yeah, and for most of us, I guess living in Manawatu, a lot of the back roads, we will come across these right of ways where you have to, pause and wait for oncoming traffic to go past. And because the argument is that should be the case on this bridge. And since the story, we have had people come to us saying, well, it's not the only bridge in our district. And
in fact, there's one with those sort of priority one-way bridges between Huanui and Colleton, which is a really bad one. And something about those bridges, people never seem to remember who has right of way. I've had numerous instances on that bridge where I've had to slam on the brakes because I've had right of way, but the other person hasn't remembered. But then I know the road, I remember it. So, it's just a case for widening bridges everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd think so. We did put some questions to the NZTA, but they hadn't come back to us in time for the story. So there would definitely be a follow-up coming on that one.
Is this the opinion of residents that it's got the perception of dangerous, or have incidents happened on that bridge?
There have been, I think, three or four crashes in the last 3 or 4 years, and most recently there was a fatal just last month. Mm. And it's certainly the opinion of residents that they feel the width of the road there has played a part. Obviously, the police are investigating, and we kind of can't come really to that conclusion. No. But they are wanting it to be one way. They want it to be wider. They want signage, which seems like an obvious one. And even talked about sort of barriers on the sides as well.
I mean, this comes up time and time again in the Standard. We've got, as I mentioned, the bridge out by Colleton, which had a petition raised for it, which I signed. We've got this bridge in Cheltenham. We've got the level crossing out by the airport, where there's been a high sort of incident of near misses and the incident with the bus. The Five Dips, I think it's the AA, categorised that as one of the most dangerous roads in New Zealand out on the way to Huanui and Ashurst. And yet no major work seems to be done on any of them.
No, and there was certainly a great level of frustration and comments from people under the story on Stuff on Monday morning. They're certainly giving it to NZTA, and a lot of, I guess, animosity towards, I think, some of the big, how much goes on the big projects, the transmission gullies, and the time, and obviously that's a saga that went on for decades. But these major metropolitan roading projects that kind of suck up so much of the attention, so much of the money. And, I guess out in the regions, we've got a lot of trouble spots that they only need a couple of $1 million probably thrown at them, but they just can't seem to get it.
And then we hear stories like out in Levin, where they've put the new barriers up and now residents can't get out of the way of oncoming traffic when they want to turn into their own driveways. So when Waka Kotahi actually try and fix something, they're making it worse.
Yeah, no, it's Yeah, it's a bit of a nonsense, that one.
Let's move on. This is the big ticket item and the thing that I think people are very interested in watching. Well, I am, but I'm morbidly curious about this sort of thing. The DHB having its last meeting. And, of course, this means that moving forward, we're going to see how the sort of how the health service is run, but also that accountability side of things, because, you know, the DHB do publish their agendas and talk about, you know, everything's laid out in their meetings, and how that's going to work in the future is going to be very interesting. I would have thought very interesting from a reporting point of view as well.
It is. And we're still, I guess, to really find out what that's going to look like. I mean, I understand talking to Janine Rankin, a health reporter, since today on Tuesday with doing the story, that I think there's going to be like a regular, I suppose, briefing with her, who that's with, and to what amount of detail there's going to be. Mm. We're not too sure. And whether it's going to be with the same person every time, we're not too sure.
Is it just going to be more OIA requests?
There's never any shortage of those or the need for them. But yeah, we're still to really get a clear idea of what the level of transparency, I suppose, is going to be on going forward, and just who are the people making the decisions, and what the chain of command is. Mm. So yeah, it's going to be interesting, and there's throughout the country, there's no halt in the number of these horror stories. Problems, particularly around EDs. It's
EDs, and in Palmerston North's case, mental health as well. You've been recovering it. RNZ have been covering it as well, which is awesome to see this stuff laid out for everyone to see. It appears, though, that it's not falling on deaf ears or blind eyes, but it's just nothing seems to be changing. And I do struggle to see how just moving some, you know, playing musical chairs at the leadership level is actually going to, you know, help people at the bottom. And I've asked Tang Utekere about this as well. You know, the government announced the biggest amount of investment in the health service in decades. And then there was that little footnote at the bottom that said, but a lot of that money is just going to wipe the debt from the DHB so that the new health service can start. Just wipe the debt. Why take up the money that could be used? I don't get it, Matt. Help me here.
It's difficult to see where it's going and when we're going to actually see change. Mm. And you don't have to be too cynical to think, oh, they'll get the first few steps in place, and by then we'll probably have a general election and. Who knows what National are going to propose if they came into power. So.
I did ask Ian McKelvey about this on Friday, and I don't know if I hit the nail on the head with my complaint, but it was the idea that my view of what the opposition should be doing right now is going, here are the priorities, deal with the priorities, and the government has, I think the government and opposition are kind of in alignment with what the priorities are. At least the government's doing something. You know, Three Waters, health reform, they're doing something. But the opposition are just holding this stuff up by arguing about the nuts and bolts of things instead of just going, look, we need to do something, so let's do it. But, hasn't it always been the way?
Yeah, it's always the challenge for the opposition to not be negative. But so often they do just fall in the trap of poking holes at what is being proposed rather than really keep bringing a sturdy alternative.
Mm. And stealing our assets in the case of Three Waters. So, yes, the DHB last meeting, is there any sort of official send-off for the elected officials and any of the leadership team that are moving on?
Yeah, well, I think they've sort of got a chance to sort of give their, valedictory speeches and farewell morning tea, and which Janine sort of covered off in her story with some their parting thoughts.
And of course, there'll be some faces, familiar faces in there, because a number of the DHB are also city councillors. So I wonder if this is going to have a knock-on effect in the by-election, because, of course, if you're a city councillor and a seat on the DHB, that would be a survivable income, one would assume, but just one, when you're used to both, might not be enough.
Yeah, it's a good point. And there may be some members of the DHB where it is their one role in governance, and losing that, they may cast their eye towards trying to gain a role on a city or district council, and trying to continue to serve.
Well, we shall see what happens there. We are with Matt Dallas from the Manawatu Standard, looking at what they have been reporting on. You are listening to The Catch-Up. If you want to hear this or previous editions, head to the website npr.nz/show/catch-up. The final story we're going to talk about today, with a very provocative headline, Woodville Meth Queen Gets Parole. And actually, this is kind of a good news story, isn't it?
Yes, well, this was a story kind of brought back. This is about Jolene Rose, who rose to infamy, I suppose, several years ago, because I think it was my first year at the Standard when the stories all came out, which she was dubbed Woodville's methamphetamine queen.
This was like a multi-million dollar empire, wasn't it?
It was, and it was all run out of a innocuous looking house in Woodville, kept a loaded gun in a dominatrix hood, buried cash in the garden. But now she's...
Sounds like you're reading the blurb from a novel.
I know. It should be like Queen of the South or Breaking Bad. There has to be a TV deal at some point. But she has
she was making signs, like novelty signs to sell at car boot sales.
Yeah.
What a cover.
Yeah, so but she's made really great progress in prison, and she's been training mobility dogs. And she's now set for parole. So it is quite the life turnaround.
Is the justice system working, Matthew? That sounds like a good news story.
We can only hope. But it was a very cinematic case back in the day, and
I urge
people
to
refresh readers on it.
Yeah, Jono wrote a very good article on this and sort of refreshing us in the past. And you know, the security systems in this house and the police radio scanner and the guns and the money buried in the back garden. I mean, it is literally like something plucked from Hollywood.
Yeah, and it kind of is one of those cases, and there's been a few of them where it just makes you realise that there is this appeal to run these operations out of the Woodvilles, the Featherstons, and that's rather than the big city. And once you read about it, you can understand the method behind it.
Is this a sort of isolated incident for Manawatu, or have there been other stories in the past where large criminal activity things have been happening in the area?
Oh, we've had a couple of cases the last few years involving fairly big, I think, cannabis operation around Fielding, and there might have been another one in Tararua. I wouldn't want to try to pluck names and figures, because I might mix up a couple of cases and get myself in trouble. So, but they do, I suppose, pop up from time to time. But this one, this one certainly probably took the case back in the day in Woodville.
Very good, but good to see that she has turned her life around. And it does seem genuine. You know, when you read these things and you go, they're not telling the truth. This one seems like a genuine one. I mean, training mobility dogs is maybe not the first thing that you'd pluck out the air when you say you want to get back into society. So hopefully she is going to do some good moving forward. Matthew Dallas from the Manawatu Standard, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
And remember, if you want to listen to this or previous editions of the Catch Up series, head to the website npr.nz/show/catch-up. Hopefully back on tomorrow with Mayor Helen Warboys from Manawatu District Council. Matiwa. If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.